Coming up, I got some MBA and I got some Masters because I'm at the Masters. That's next. It's the Bill Simmons Podcast presented by FanDuel. Take a shot at betting the NBA with FanDuel, America's number one sports book. Right now, you can check out the new and improved Parlay Hub, filtered by odds, sport, and bet type to easily find the most popular parlays and same game parlays all on one page. Plus, start betting on the Explore page and the Pulse and bet live same game parlays for every NBA game. Download the app today. Bet with FanDuel, official partner of the NBA. The Ringer is committed to responsible gaming. Please visit rg-help.com to learn more about the resources and helplines available and listen to the end of the episode for additional details. You must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit rg-help.com. This episode is brought to you by Simply Safe. While you refresh your space and take care of your spring cleaning, now's a great time to look into Simply Safe home security. It's the only home security I use, and I can't recommend it enough, especially as we head toward the summer when people disappear, when they go on vacations, when they go do things, and you don't want to leave your house or your apartment on its own. You deserve some peace of mind. Get 20% off your system today when you sign up for Fast Protect Monitoring at simplysafe.com/BS. There's no safe like Simply Safe. We're also brought to you by the Ringer Podcast Network. On Sunday on the Prestige TV podcast, me and Sean Fennessy and Joanna Robinson are going to be reacting right after episode 3 of Succession. We do not have screeners for this one, so we're going to have to tape right after the show ends on Sunday night and put it up as soon as we can. I will also be putting up a new podcast with Rosillo on this feed that night as well. Hope you checked out the rewatchables we did. He Got Game this week. Hope you checked out all the FanDuel TV stuff we did, including Through the Ringer, which we launched today with host Tate Frazier. Every week, he's going to bounce through whatever is relevant in the sports world and the gambling space with members of the Ringer staff. We called it Through the Ringer. It has a podcast feed, and you can watch the whole show. It's a video podcast. It looks great. Super excited about it. He had Kevin O'Connor, Big Waz, and Nora Princiati on today's episode of Through the Ringer. Coming on HBO Friday night, 8 p.m., the latest installment of Music Box, the documentary we did about Jason Isbell. It's called Running With Our Eyes Closed. It's fantastic. Couldn't be more proud of it. If you missed the 8 p.m. screening on HBO, don't worry. You can go right to HBO Max. You can watch it whenever you want. I think this is a really, really, really good one. So psyched that we're involved. You can also watch all the installments of Music Box. We have 6 up there that we already did, and that is all on the HBO Max feed as well. Congratulations to director Sam Jones. I'm pumped that everybody gets to watch it. Again, 8 p.m. Friday night, HBO. Coming up on this podcast, Joe House and I are going to react to the Denver Phoenix game and some last-minute NBA award stuff late Thursday night here in Augusta. And then we talked about round one of the Masters, a lot of golf and food stuff, and some possible bets for the weekend with me and Dave Chang and House and Nathan Hubbard. We are all here in Augusta, the greatest place on earth. Second year in a row, third in the last 6 years. Just one of those weeks you just feel lucky that we get to do this for a living. Great stuff. Can't wait to talk about basketball and golf. It's all next. First, our friends from Pearl Jam. All right, we're taping this. It's 11 o'clock East Coast time. Joe House and I are going to wait until after the Phoenix-Denver game. And Denver decided not to play any of their best players.
Charles Barkley said it's the Nugget against the Suns tonight.
This was a great snapshot of what the playoffs might look like, a potential Western Finals preview. No, this just goes, this is par for the course with this weird season we're having. I was thinking about Phoenix, though. I think you and I both think they're probably the gun to the head pick in the West, right? Even though they're the 4 seed, would you have somebody else?
I have an update.
What do you have?
I have the Warriors.
What?
Wiggins.
That's it? Wiggins just being back for the playoffs, you flipped?
Well, it's not just that. Gary Payton is playing. So just in the last, 5 days, my sentiments about the West have really changed.
That's your gun to the head pick?
Yeah. The defending champions.
I don't think you're wrong, but I just need to digest it for a second.
I mean, I have no idea what version of Andrew Wiggins we're getting. I don't know what kind of shape Gary Payton's in. He had a beautiful follow-up dunk I saw, so the athleticism looks like it's there. But man, every other team I have much bigger problems with than the Warriors. The Warriors' single biggest problem is Draymond punching Jordan Poole in the face.
Yeah, and that was like a lifetime ago.
Exactly.
So you're betting on the experience in the playoff reps over... I mean, we've talked about the Phoenix thing before. Phoenix is the favorite on FanDuel. They're 2-1 in the West.
Just not going to go against a healthy Steph Curry.
Nobody has ever traded for their best player during the season and then made the finals. I looked this up. It has not happened. There's no precedent for it in the history of the NBA. Now, this season has had a lot of things that have never happened before in the history of the NBA. So it's not like it can't happen. I was thinking about that Durant trade, though. You know, this Mikal Bridges just becoming a 27 to 28 point a game scorer for the Nets, really big sample size now, basically since he joined the team in mid-February. So I think it's like 22, 23 games at this point. And he is able to initiate half-court offense, get his own shot, come through in crunch time situations in ways that, you know, he was mostly a stand in the corner guy unless Booker or Paul was hurt for Phoenix. And then you would see this side of him when one of the guys was missing. I'm like, oh, there's something more here. But I never in a million years thought that he was going to turn into this. And you think of all the other stuff that they gave up in that trade. I do feel like there's more pressure on that trade now. I think it was defensible. I understand why they did it. I certainly didn't kill it. You got to go get Durant. He's top 16. You got to do what it takes. But man, the fact that he's this good on top of all the picks, what if they get bounced in round two against Denver?
It can totally happen, but it's worth the gamble. It's worth the big gamble for the new owner. He immediately shows his fan base that he's different, that, you know, because the single most compelling aspect of that trade in terms of the lore that surrounds it is that the Phoenix was balking at the asking price of Brooklyn, and then he arrived on the scene.
Well, the asking price was throw Bridges in there. Yeah. Phoenix like, nope, we're not doing that. Nope. New owner comes in. Nah, we're going to throw him in, actually.
Yeah. Are you out of your fucking mind? We're going to go get Kevin Durant, okay? They want Bridges? Good. They can have him.
And you watch, like, even... Again, we're taping this at halftime, but a couple of the plays in the first half where he's just so good. I sound like Collinsworth. Oh, Kevin Durant, he's so good.
KD.
He's such a good back. Oh, my God.
The way he initiates.
Oh, my God, Al. But he is, like, amazing. But here's the trade. It was Bridges, Cam Johnson, Crowder, who they flipped. First round picks, 23, 25, 27, 29, and a first round pick swap in 28. So they gutted their team.
Well,
they gutted all the assets they have, except for
a commitment.
They kept Ayton and they kept Booker.
They're going to be in the free agency market is what they're going to do.
Yeah, but then you see the new CBA where the high spending teams, there's some real bells and whistles against that now.
The cap's going up. New owners got big checkbook. They're going to be in the free agency market.
We both agree. I understand the trade. It would have made me blink because especially like the market for like a Bridges, Ananobi, guys like that seem to be between 2 and 3 first rounders. So on top of the other ones, it's just a lot for a guy who had 2 injuries just this year, who has had major surgery, who's been in the league since 2007.
The precedent I was interested in, you led with a precedent, like no team in the history of the league has acquired its best player post All-Star break and going into playoffs, right?
Well, no team has acquired a guy like Durant, who's the most unique superstar we've ever had with his ability. The ultimate just, if you're in college and he's playing pickup, he just fits in with whatever style, whatever the other 4 players, it just doesn't matter. He's always him, no matter what the situation is.
So maybe you answered my question, because what I wanted to ask in terms of the precedent thing is, can we think of anybody that had this short of a runway to get with a team and immediately transform that team from probably second round, maybe conference final fodder at best?
So like a midseason trade. There's two examples that I could think of. One was the Havlicek stole the ball year going way back into the 60s. I think it was 64 when Wilt got traded back to Philly, 65. And it was basically those two were the best two teams. Boston, Philly takes them to seven, and they acquired Wilt midseason that year. And it was the Havlicek steals the ball game. So that's one. The other one, he's not a superstar, but it did win the title. It was the Rasheed Wallace trade.
Okay.
Was he the best Detroit Piston in 2004? Probably not. Ben Wallace probably was. Maybe Billups. Maybe he was the third best, but for what he did for that team. And I feel like that team, it was the four guys together. You needed all of them. So that one, they integrated him pretty seamlessly. And Rasheed, you know, at least at that point in his career, was the kind of guy who could fit in almost any situation if his head was on straight. That time he was, remember?
Yeah. And that was the only one that I could really think of, but it's different because Rasheed didn't need to touch the ball on a certain number of, and I'm not suggesting that KD needs it, but that's what makes sense. That's how it's going to be. He's going to be most effective.
There's one other usage
component to putting KD into the mix.
True, you're right. Because he is the best player. He's in crunch time, last 5 minutes. You're going to run stuff through him. There's one other one that I hesitate to mention because you're going to go to F-bomb frenzy. Pau Gasol, 2008.
Oh yeah. I detest.
That got them to the finals. He became second best player immediately. He wasn't their best player. So the example was like best player. He wasn't their best player. Kobe was, but that was another example of like just being able to slide somebody in who becomes crucially important. This is pretty unique though, but it's been a unique situation or in a unique season where they're the four seed, but I think people feel like they're the favorite. FanDuel certainly does. You could make a case. He's the guy you would want out of anyone in the West in a game seven or a down 3-2 situation, something like that, even though Jokic is in the West.
So you're inclined. So I after the sweep last year, which will forever live on his resume, he was swept out of the first round of the playoffs with his chosen partner in crime in the form of Kyrie Irving.
It's really bad. And he got his ass outplayed by Jason Tatum.
And at the end of games, because of the confusion of that team, their confused approach to offense, he looked a little bit, you know, it wasn't the crunch time lockdown, just let KD have the ball and let him cook.
It's hard to say how much the dysfunction played into that, but
okay.
I would say a high amount because we've seen him come through in other situations. But yeah, he looked like
a lifetime of coming
through. He looked like he was on the other side of the hill, but then you watch him this year before, you know, when he was humming with Kyrie before he got hurt, he looked like KD from 3-4 years ago.
Okay.
And then this Phoenix version, you know, we'll see. But I mean, that team's such a smart foundationally with Paul, with Booker, and with Ayton, like just controlling everything near the rim. And then if they can play wing roulette with that fifth spot, they're going to be there. But man, you know, the most, I think, just in recent history, the most teams have given up for a trade for a star. It was that Davis trade, which we've talked about in the past, which was Ingram and Ball and Josh Hart and Mo Wagner and the fourth pick in 2019 and a 22 first. And a first swap in 23 and a choice of 24 or 25 first. That was a lot. Especially because when you see how well Brandon Ingram's playing, like that, he's looked like a top 25 guy. So it's that trade. And then there was that Paul George trade, which was just an absolute shitload. But as that was SGA, yikes. 21, 22, 24, 26 first, 23, 25 swaps, and a top 14 protected pick in 23. They've already gotten SGA, the fucking awesome Jalen Williams, not the other Jalen Williams, the rookie of the year kid, Jalen Williams, and Trey Mann out of that trade, not to mention all the other picks. But they got Paul George and Kawhi, the Clippers, in that trade. So it's a two thing. This Durant thing, if Bridges, like, do you believe this Bridges thing? Is this just a small sample size? They need a score. He's on a little hot streak, or is this who he is?
Oh, I think it's a lot closer to who he is.
It's kind of how I feel too.
I mean, I think, you know, that's why Phoenix pre what's the new owner's
pre name? Matt Ishbia?
Pre-Ishbia.
Matt with one T. One T, Matt. He's like Ray Pruitt. Ray Pruitt, one T. All my mama could afford.
Not low T, Matt. Don't get mad at us, Matt. Just one T.
Yeah, one T, Matt. One T, Matt came in. It's like, yeah, no, we're going to put Mikal Bridges in the trade. But holy shit, they gave up a lot. So this goes to why this regular season has been so disappointing and such a letdown over and over again. Just kicks in the balls everywhere. Last night, kudos to LeBron and Davis for playing in the back-to-back. Like, should we have to congratulate two guys who are making $80 million a year combined, who have already won a title, for playing back-to-back games? I feel like we do.
In the context of the
season. I was
season,
psyched that they did that.
It also was a very important game to them and the seeding.
But they could have ducked it.
I mean, it wouldn't have been a duck. It would have been some kind of preservation. They're paying a price now for the disorganization, the dysfunction of Russell Westbrook.
Oh, yeah. And not getting rid of him sooner.
Yeah.
But when you think of all the different matchups and how fun all this stuff is, it does feel like it will make up for the regular season. Right now, we're looking at Suns Clippers and we're looking at Kings Warriors as the 4-5 and the 3-6. And the Lakers right now are in the 7th seed going against a Memphis team that's been pretty good now for, I don't know, 3 weeks, 4 weeks. They've looked very Memphis-y again.
Yep.
And yet that Lakers, with the experience of Steven Adams isn't back in time, no Brandon Clark, that's just a bad beat for them.
It's a bad beat. I'm bummed out because I like that Memphis team.
I hate to say this, but we both like this Lakers, whatever this might be, because it's not just the Bron being able to come back from plantar fasciitis, which is usually a 4-month injury unless it's him, and then Davis. But then Austin Reeves has turned into a real guy. Like, he's, I think the last 25 games, last 23 games, he's like 18 a game, 50-40-80 splits. You didn't like my tweet last night, though.
I didn't like it. I loved it. I loved your tweet last night.
Well, so they're handicapped because he's a restricted free agent. They can only offer him 4 for $50.8 million. And somebody else is going to go over the top and offer him like 4 for $70 million because all these teams have cap space. And then they're going to have to match it, which is really going to handicap with, I think they have to match it. It can't be like a Caruso situation because it feels a little similar, not just because they're white dudes.
What's the fair price for Austin?
To me, it's like Kevin Herter money. And he makes like $16 million a year. 16. I think that's the range. It's like Norm Powell makes 16.
14.
I think he's
16.
A $16 million a year guy. We both like Reeves. He's not what you think he is if you don't watch basketball. Like, he's crafty. He gets to the line.
That's the point. The getting to the free throw line.
He gets rebounds in traffic. Like, yeah. He knows how to play basketball. I like that guy.
So that's the thing to me that's most, that's the single biggest change for the Lakers. By way of, you know, trading away Westbrook and the guys that they acquired.
Right, addition by subtraction plus the dudes.
But the collective impact on the team's basketball IQ, it seems like they're like 50 points smarter. The ball moves. It's just insane the way the ball moves, the way that they, you know. And Davis playing at Davis level kind of helps for sure. But
and they tried to turn Westbrook into something. I don't think that was totally his fault.
On
the other hand, he does that, like shorthand. Westbrook shit all the time. Like, we were watching last night that Clippers-Lakers game, and you know, his team misses. He's standing at midcourt. He's the guy that's supposed to get anybody who might cut back for a fast break layup. And somebody runs right by him, and he realizes it 2 seconds late, and he takes a bad angle. Like, he's just, you know, he's frustrating. And I think he was immensely frustrating for LeBron. But yeah, the team they have now is a team that makes sense with LeBron and Davis, but I just continue to think it's unrealistic that those guys stay healthy.
Well, it's why when you asked me at gunpoint at the beginning of the pod, who am I taking? I think it's the Warriors now. It's if Wiggins is back.
Well, the other thing that happened today, so Miami beat Philly by a lot. It was a blowout. Philly played their dudes for some reason. Their heart wasn't in it. They don't really need it. It makes way more sense for them to want Miami to get the 7 seed. But the thing is, they get to play Brooklyn the last day of the season, Philly. Brooklyn has a tiebreaker with Miami. They're one up on Miami right now. This is a wrap because Philly's going to tank the living shit out of that Brooklyn game because they want to play Brooklyn.
This is
they don't want to play Miami.
This is a wrap.
So they let Miami have their little thing today. Embiid probably clinched the MVP with that huge Boston game he had the other night. And this is it. So now they're going to play Brooklyn. And Miami's going to play the Celtics. And I get to sweat that one out for 2 weeks. Wasn't expecting that one. Figured the 2-7 is going to be... Wait, am I overreacting to this Miami team? What do you think?
I think this Miami team stinks.
Okay.
I really do. I was prepared down the stretch. I was giving them the benefit of the doubt. They owned... They did everything that they needed to do. They had a Saturday night game against Brooklyn a week and a half ago.
Yeah.
They scored 69 points in the first half. They were in perfect position at home. Jimmy Butler was playing. It was a Jimmy Butler game. And then they had the worst defensive performance in 30 years in the second half.
Right.
And went on a 3-game losing streak. Miami can go F itself. I'm done with them. That's not a serious team. The problem with them is they made a gamble on Kyle Lowry and they lost that gamble. And they they can't score and they can't play defense consistently. They're an every other night team. So, yes, it's annoying that they're going to be somewhat formidable. There'll be a different kind of challenge for the Celtics in the first round, but it's like a 4-2. You're going to, you would prefer not to have to play 6 games in the first round. That's probably what it's going to take.
Two things worry me. One, I sent this to you, Miami's record against the spread this year, which Miami's 5 games over 500, and I think their record against the spread is like 29-47-5. They're 18 games under 500 against the spread.
Worst in the NBA.
Worst by far. Worst by like 6-7 games. They're this team that over, and you can see it from the clutch stats and their weird record in the 1-point games. They're this team that they underperform and yet somehow pull these games out. Like they were doing it tonight against Philly with the zone defense, and they have all these little gimmicks. They have a great coach. And the thing with them, to win a series, they can suck twice in the series, right? Which they did last year.
Yeah.
You suck in 2 of them. You play hard in 4, and then you get lucky because weird shit happened the other one. They could easily just win 4 out of 7 of any series. So I continue to be afraid of them. People think I'm crazy. My team, if Robert Williams is back with all the other, every pretty healthy at this point, it seems like it's set. And then they have this Philly situation. Embiid had a huge game against them Tuesday night. No Rob Williams, no Jaylen Brown. Conspiracy Bill feels like they let him pour it on a little bit in that game.
Oh.
For the false sense of security.
Wait. So you think they're playing mental rope-a-dope?
I think they just, the way they defended him, I thought was like a wee bit suspicious.
Hmm.
It was like one of those... It was like a preseason football game where you don't want to show any of your defenses.
So you're saying the Celtics let Embiid kind
of
have
I don't think they let him do anything. I think they just played it very straight.
Okay.
And I think when it gets to a round 2 playoff series, they will not play the same way.
They'll have different defensive looks.
There will be a lot of different things happening.
I see.
Which seems to be. But okay. Now it seems like that clinched MVP for Embiid. I'm still deciding what to do. I was going to throw this at you, actually. Let's take a break. The NBA season is coming down to the wire, and now is the perfect time to download FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. New customers get a no-sweat first bet up to $1,000. That's bonus bets back if the first bet doesn't win. Download the FanDuel Sportsbook app. It's safe, secure, super easy to use. Then you can bet on everything, from the money line to point scores and threes drained. I would look at Sunday, the Sixers have a vested interest for Brooklyn to get the 6th seed. And if it comes down to Brooklyn wins and they're the 6th seed, or else Philly would have to play Miami, I would bet on Philly rolling over in that Brooklyn game. So the soonest you can jump on that one, I would do it. Don't miss the chance to get your no-sweat first bet up to $1,000 of bonus bets when you go to FanDuel.com/BS. That's FanDuel.com/BS to learn more. And FanDuel now live in Massachusetts. Download the app now. Take advantage of their great special offers, boosts, and more. Make every moment more with FanDuel, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. You must be 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $10 deposit required. Refund issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 14 days. Restrictions apply. See full terms at FanDuel. BetOnline.com/sportsbook. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Hope is here. In Massachusetts, visit gamblinghelplinema.org or call 1-800-327-5050 for 24/7 support. In New York, call 1-877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. FanDuel is offering online sports wagering in Kansas under agreement with Kansas Star Casino, LLC. In Colorado, Iowa, Michigan, New Jersey, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Illinois, Tennessee, or Virginia, call 1-800-GAMBLE or visit FanDuel.com/RG. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP or text NEXTSTEP to 53342 in Arizona. In Connecticut, call 1-888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org/chat. In Indiana, 1-800-9-WITH-IT. In Kansas, 1-800-522-4700 or visit ksgamblinghelp.com. Louisiana, 877-770-STOP. In Maryland, visit mdgamblinghelp.org. In Wyoming, 800-522-4700. In West Virginia, visit 1800gambler.net.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer partner of the NBA. It's just what you need to sit back and enjoy the game. And they're also getting fans closer to the game than ever. You can win exclusive NBA prizes like courtside seats, signed memorabilia, and more. I love Michelob because of how light it is. It's only 95 calories with 2.6 carbs. You know what the perfect time for Michelob Ultra is? A little doubleheader, a little NBA doubleheader. Right at first half of the first game. I don't know, West Coast time, that's usually about 5 o'clock, 5:30. Perfect time for a beer. You can do it. Grab a pack to enjoy today. Learn more and enter for your chance to win at MichelobUltra.com/courtside, LDA 21 and up.
So I was trying to figure out why I was struggling so much with this MVP situation. We've already talked way too much about it, just in life. All the podcasts, all the shows, it's just too much rhetoric. It feels like with this load management era and it being a regular season award, that the fact that none of these guys are even going to play 70 games really makes this all of it hard to figure out. Like their records, the team's records when they play are all pretty much the same. Statistically, you could make cases for all three of them or big picture. You know, Embiid's probably had the most forceful season. He's probably the best that gets clutch. Jokic is the best offensive player. Giannis is on the best team, and we all think he's the best player. So whatever way you want to go. But you mentioned this to me when we were talking about it earlier. Like Jokic won the post-bubble season.
Yeah.
Really, because of durability.
He played 72 of 72 games.
And that was like one of the calling cards for why we picked him. And then he took it up a level last year. I defend both of those votes. I would do him again. I'm also not crazy about voting for him three straight times. And I know we're only supposed to vote for this year, but narratives are a piece of this. And if Giannis ends up with two and Jokic ends up with two and Embiid ends up with one in the last 5 years, that feels...
makes sense.
Right to me.
They're the three best players over this half decade, and having the award sort of self-selected, you know, its way into that,
it feels okay.
Allocation makes sense.
It feels okay, which is why I'm probably landing on Embiid, but I can't shake the Giannis piece of this. I think Giannis is the best player in the league. I think that's the best team in the league. Statistically, he's there, except for he's missed 17 games. And, I don't want to feel stupid if Philly, like if somehow like Miami got the sixth seed and Miami beat Philly in round one or something and we're in a 0-7 Dirk situation. So,
well, will you feel stupid if Philly loses in the second round?
Yeah, what happens if Boston beats them in five? This is the thing. You're not supposed to think about playoffs with this award. It's a regular season award. But on the other hand,
well, I mean, you know, everybody punished James Harden for a number of years.
Well, I was looking up like, just in general, fewest games ever played by somebody that won the MVP. Like, how many guys do you think in a normal season missed more than 10 games and won the MVP? In a normal season. So no lockout, bubble, strike, any of that stuff.
I would say not very many.
Least amount of games ever, Karl Malone in the strike season, 49 out of 50. Throw him out.
Yeah.
Bill Walton. I wrote about this extensively in my book. He won the MVP in 78, 58 games at 82. He hurt his foot, missed the last like 22 games. But when he played, they were like 50-7 or 51-7, something like that. And I actually went through it, and it actually was the right choice because there were no other good choices. Anyway, LeBron, 62 in the strike season in 2012. Giannis, 63 in the COVID season. Bob Cousy, 64, 1957. Russell, 69, 1958. And Allen Iverson, 71 in 2001. So since the 60s on, the only time in a normal season we've ever had somebody play under 70 games and win the MVP was Bill Walton in 1978 and Allen Iverson in 2001 and only missed 11. All three of our choices this year are not going to get to 70 games.
It's a different league.
It's a different league. So if it's a different league, House, does the MVP mean as much as it used to?
Well, that's a whole different... Sure, it does.
Because we're gearing more toward being a all that matters is the playoffs league. So what do we do with the regular season in terms of...
It's the same concept that informs your approach to the All-NBA team, which I think is absolutely the right approach. Who won the season? And I think it's fine to recognize Joel Embiid for carrying the 76ers to slightly exceed their expectations for the season coming in. They were supposed to be where they are, and he did it. He's their most important player. They had good performance from James Harden, but
and if you throw away the first 2 weeks of the season, they're one of the two best teams in the league for November, December, January, February, March, April. They've been one of the top two or three, no question.
That's it.
The narrative thing, I think, is why I'm probably going to end up getting there.
He also was second.
He will be the first person you think about this season.
Yeah.
Right?
And he was second in each of the two previous seasons.
Right.
So that it's I feel like it's right. It's time.
And he's had a couple moments, which, you know, you hate to distill the season down to 2-3 games, but him kicking Denver's ass on Saturday and the end of January was a moment.
That's right.
Him putting up 52, even the Celtics were missing a couple guys, that was a moment. I think it's going to end up, I think Embiid's going to win. I think I'm going to end up voting for him, but it's just different when, you know, with everybody missing so many games, it just feels a little different.
Well, hopefully this in-season tournament and 65
games. You know, we're still not in talk about that. Do you like the in-season tournament?
I don't understand it yet.
I don't understand it either. it's part of the schedule, but it means more. And basically, it seems to come down to the players will get $500,000 extra per player. Why do I care? since when did I care if guys made more money? Who cares?
You don't care about guys making more money. You care about guys playing basketball games. And if this is a sufficient incentive for the guys to play, then we support that.
Go to a 72 game season and increase the incentive for everybody to play because it might screw up with their playoff seeding. Make the playoffs worth more.
You just need to submit your resume and application for assistant commissioner.
I give up. I've tried to help this league for too long. Nobody listens to me. I've had it with this league. In season tournament, freaking positionless all NBA. I know you hated that.
I just don't understand why it's not why you can have a big, a small, and three open slots. You have to have a somebody in the front court, somebody in the back court.
You have to. It has to look like a fucking basketball thing.
Yeah.
I thought of something since Sunday that I thought they should do. If it's this important for salary and for bonuses, stuff like that, why not just have a list of the best 12 players for the season? I know we have the MVP ballot, but the concept of an MVP is a little different. Like, I'm leaning toward having De'Aaron Fox or Sabonis in my fifth spot.
Wow. I don't even, that makes sense.
I wouldn't say they were one of the five best players in the league, but for most valuable for what they mean to their team. But maybe it's a list of just the 12 best players in the league. And it's like a basketball team. You only need 12 anyway. And you just rank it 1 through 12. And that's how we decide this. And then all NBA can be all NBA.
Why 12 instead of 15?
I don't know. I'm trying to come up with.
I like 15.
All right, 15, whatever.
15 at least mirrors the construct.
And then it could be nine guards. We could just say these were the best 15 players this season. Oh, nine of them were guards. But I still feel like the All-NBA team should look like a team.
Got to have one big and one small.
Have to. As we head toward the stretch here, a couple things. I just wanted to give you the floor on a couple of these arguments.
Okay.
It drives you crazy that I want to put Jimmy Butler second team All-NBA. Why?
Because I think that he bears some responsibility for how mediocre Miami is.
You were much more passionate about this morning, but I think it was just because you just had coffee.
I had coffee. And
you had iced coffee. You were like, well, if you're a motherfucking second team All-NBA, your team can't be 41-37.
They're 43-37 now.
Yeah.
But my issue is the lack of consistency night to night. At some point, your best player has to bear some responsibility for that. That's all. Okay. I don't have an issue with him as third team All-NBA. And honestly, this time 3 weeks ago, I had Markkanen in. I think
now he's out of the All-NBA and he has to serve in the Army.
And
it's a rough week for Laurie.
He won. He made the All-Star game and he'll be in the top three for most improved. So that's probably the right recognition for Markkanen since Utah fell off a cliff.
Be telling my grandkids about the 2023 most improved. See who won that one. I have Mitchell right now. I have Mitchell and SGA as my two first team guards.
Great.
You okay with that?
Great.
Would you put Luka second team or third team if they don't make the play-in?
Third.
No play-in, he's third team.
Third. I would put him in third either way. The 10th seed in the play-in.
He's at third team and third 16-ounce glass of sweet tea for Luka. Third donut.
I don't want to even make the jokes that I really, I mean,
yeah,
we heard some stuff.
Stop. If LeBron James plays 55 games, can I put him third team All NBA? Because I'm going to.
Man.
You were trying to make the case for Davis to squeeze him in at forward.
Well, because I thought, I would have Davis in as a center. I would have Sabonis as a forward. See, I think that
Sabonis doesn't play forward.
I think Davis is more important to the Lakers this year than LeBron.
Yeah, I like that take. That's
I think
a good
the
one.
Two stretches that he's been on.
I think I'm going to end up putting LeBron and Curry on there because they're going to hit my 55 game mark.
I don't have any problem whatsoever with Curry.
And I'm going to bump Markkanen. I'm bumping Ja. Ja's at 60
fine.
Games right now. He was a huge distraction for 3 weeks.
I don't have any issue with that.
Brunson is the single toughest cut for me.
One of a Nick has to make
two,
it.
So right, so I have Randall.
You do have Randall.
Because of the forward spot.
Man.
He's one of the six best forwards. The only other one that I think, unless
it's disrespectful
it's,
to leave Brunson off. Brunson
know,
is the catalyst. He's the reason.
There's
he's
too
the
many
engine.
Guards.
Knicks fans don't look at that situation and say, oh, thank God Julius Randle turned it around.
I get it.
And made us this team. What they say is, thank God we got Brunson.
And they
he
say, thank God.
Our team.
And Mark Cuban, who is just full of shit. Did you read that piece?
No.
He's like, oh, in January, February, and the family didn't want. He conveniently leaves out the part that they could have signed him in the whole offseason.
11 months
leading
previous.
Up to the start of the
That's
season.
Right, of course.
For what was it? 4 years, $55 million?
He would have taken it.
And they didn't offer him the money?
Every report says he would have taken it.
And Brunson, I know shit about this Brunson thing. Brunson was like, he wanted to stay. They didn't. They made it seem like they didn't care if he stayed. So at some point, he's like, well, fuck this.
Yep.
My godfather runs the Knicks. I'm going to go play there for way more money. Fuck these guys.
Kind of worked out.
Cuban was on one in that press conference. That was crazy. Like somebody has to challenge that.
Well, he's got to do something. He's got to come out and do some kind of performance because he's got a generational talent that's going to miss the playoffs potentially this year.
We were with somebody the other night who I won't name, but might be the guy from Dude Perfect who's from Dallas. We love this guy. We talked to this guy at a party. He's a huge Hoops fan. And he was asking us, should we trade Luka? And it was the first time I'd heard anyone ask that. And it made me think where it's that rare basketball situation where it's like, of course you shouldn't trade him. He's one of the top three trade assets in the league. But it's like, if this is all heading toward him leaving, maybe you have to think about it and just try to see how much you can get for him.
I think it was Garrett. I think that's his name.
Yeah, we liked him. He's cool. I'm going to have him on the podcast.
And by the way, he said, I would trade him. He said, "What's your opinion?" Well, I would trade him. A Dallas guy.
Well, he was like, I would take a Godfather offer for him if somebody wanted to make it.
That's what's out there right now. Only Godfather offers. Nah,
I hope he didn't portray Garrett, but I'm sure he loves it. He was a real hoop fan.
I know. We had a great conversation.
Well, it's funny that him and Zion, who were two of the top trade assets we had over the course of the last 18 months at various points, and the Zion thing, they released this statement today about his health that I didn't even understand it, because they kept talking about how he's ramping up. It's a lot of ramping up with Zion. It's ramping up. He's ramping it up. Now there's two games left in the season, and they basically said he's continuing his rehab. We'll have further updates as they come.
It's like the
playoffs are starting.
I'm so upset.
Next week?
First of all, I lost so much money on the New Orleans over.
I know. And Toronto. New Orleans and Toronto.
Well, Toronto, I can live with. New Orleans was right. They were the...
Yeah, they were right there.
Second team in January. 23-16, 23-12. Some incredible record. Zion gets hurt and that's it. Season's over.
Zion should refund you.
It's okay. I'll figure out a way to hedge.
You, me, and Rosillo, we did our over-unders. We did our locks before the season. I went 6-1. You went 4-2. Rosillo went 3-2. Combined, we're 13-5.
It's pretty good.
We gave out Nuggets first seed. We gave out our lock of the year on FanDuel, where it was Nuggets, Bucks, and Kings all to have their overs combined. It was like 5-1. I was really proud of our performance.
Thank you.
I thought we did a good job. We put the time in.
Yeah.
Unlike some of the guys in the league, we put the time in. We showed up.
There was no load management.
We didn't load manage the podcast. We taped the whole podcast with only a couple breaks.
It was long. I mean, my butt fell asleep.
Yeah, but I think Zion, it's either Zion or Luka/Dallas as the two single biggest disappointments this season for me.
Wow.
Like that's the fact great. That we went backwards in a worse way with Zion, where it's not even like a real.
See, I'm more heartbroken than disappointed about the Zion thing.
All right, I'm both. Okay. Can I be both?
Yeah. Disappointing to me is a different thing. Toronto disappoints me. Miami just seems
like a messed up situation. The coach is going to leave.
Well, those are two teams that came in that didn't make big dramatic changes in the offseason. They were like, we like our teams. Miami was in the Eastern Conference Finals two of the last 3 years. Toronto won 46 games. We like our. They came in and then they just, you know, the single most disappointing team in the whole NBA to me though is the Clippers. That situation.
The Clippers.
Well, because
they never have the guys.
They load managed their way to a 500 record. Congratulations. Yeah. Well done.
I still kind of like them. No, Dallas is wasting a prime Luka season where he's 33 a game. Come on. All right, we're going to go. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back and we're going to talk about our day at the Masters with Nathan Hubbard and the chef himself, David Chang. This episode is brought to you by Simply Safe. Whenever someone mentions spring, you can't help but think of the word fresh. Spring brings fresh air, fresh beginnings, freshly cleaned homes. It's also a really great time to take a fresh look at SimpliSafe Home Security. I use it in my home and absolutely love it. By the way, summer's coming. No better time to maybe dip in to our friends at SimpliSafe than when you're leaving your house, your condo, your apartment, wherever you live. You're probably going to go somewhere for a while. Maybe it's a week. Maybe it's 2 weeks. Guess who's going to know that? Burglars. SimpliSafe, great because it protects your whole home. Uses advanced sensors and a variety of indoor and outdoor cameras. Keep watch over your property day and night, 24/7 professional monitoring for less than $1 a day. You can even check it out on your phone. Gives you peace of mind. You want peace of mind? Try SimpliSafe today. Risk-free, no contract, 60-day money-back guarantee. Get 20% off your system when you sign up for Fast Protect Monitoring at simplisafe.com/BS. That's simplisafe.com with two I's, simplisafe.com/BS. There's no safe like SimpliSafe. This episode is supported by State Farm. If you've ever been in an accident and you're okay, but you know what happened, your first reaction is going to be, man, why did that happen? If you ever buy a new house or a new car or a new anything, there's this little rush you get when you're like, I did it. I made it happen. But really, the only words you need to remember are, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. State Farm has options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need,
File a claim right on the State Farm mobile app and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Learn more at statefarm.com.
All right, we're taping this part of the podcast. It is 8:15 Eastern time. Went to the Masters today. Round one. We have a lot of topics to discuss here with Joe House, Nathan Hubbard, David Chang. The big question every time we go to the Masters, the question you get from people like my dad, people in our life, first one they ask is, how did Tiger look? That makes me think, like, as long as he's still like a relevant in the mix golfer, that's always going to be the first question with the Masters, right, House? And he's going to be 50 in a couple of years. He still had the biggest galleries by far. The crowd was still the most excited by far if anything good happened with him. And this is just the way it's going to be. We're going to talk about what he looked like physically in a second, but he still kind of owns the Masters. It's crazy.
I wouldn't say it's crazy. I mean, it kind of makes sense. It's really, you know, now coming up on 25 years, right? 26 years is his debut victory, 1997. It's 2023 now. And all of the twists and turns in his own life and the dramatic win in 2019, it's everybody is invested in his success at that place. It's a mutual admiration society.
There is that also the thing where sometimes people are parked at a hole, so you get the one shot at him, and you really want him to do something good when he's on your hole, when he's passing by. Nathan, you were concerned about how he was walking, which has been a recurring theme with him as well.
It looked terrible. He's grimacing. Every single step is a limp, and I'm actually stunned that he shot two over today, given the stats that said he was at best middle of the pack on every category. I want him to do well. I mean, you looked at us as he walked up 10 and said, when do we start the applause? Like, it is a little bit like Jesus is coming through.
Yeah.
And he glows. He looks different. His back is still, his upper body is so strong. It's like he's countered the weakness below his waist with unbelievable strength. We saw almost every golfer out there today. None of them have a back like Tiger Woods.
Very good posture.
It's incredible. As well.
There was one moment when he kind of had to walk backwards when he was marking his thing, and he was putting the weight backwards on the bad leg, taking two steps back. It just looks rough. It just looks like he's in pain.
Yeah. We have to start listening.
The same thing we noticed last year. Like he looked like he was in pain last year. You feel like, oh, a year later it'll be better, and it just doesn't seem better.
We have to start listening to him when he tells us he does not know how many more of these he's got in him. He's telling us the truth at this point. He does not want to be freaking Larry Mize, you know, or Sandy Lyle flapping his way around the course like those guys did today. He's not, his pride is too much to let him do that. He would rather not be out there than do this. And I think the frustration is really starting to grow because he's clearly doing everything with his body that he possibly can to be ready for a day like this. He just doesn't have it in him right now.
Chang, you hadn't seen him in person post car accident. What did it look like for you?
I felt a little bit better today because I'm walking better than him, number one. Number two,
yeah, because you two herniated discs and you still were walking better.
I have to say the saddest moment this week was him missing that putt on 10 for birdie, right? Yeah. Every time he didn't do something great, I feel like the audience, the crowd was just super bummed. Yeah. And that's how much he holds over people. And I don't know who replaces that. Probably will never happen.
Yeah, I had a bunch of stuff written down, including who's the next guy. Because we parked at 10 for a while. We walked around. We saw just about everybody. We had one moment where we were going back to walk up to the front nine and didn't realize that Rory was passing through on par five on the fifth hole. And Rory's a guy who, you know, he hasn't won a major since 2014. He's always mentioned as one of golf's biggest stars. And he just doesn't have the same captivating in-person kind of vibe with the gallery. Like, people like him. He's great. But it's not the same. And that, to me, like, I just don't know who the next guy is. Who's the next gallery captivator? Who is it, House?
At the Masters, probably Jordan Spieth. If he, you know, he showed us, he kind of struggled around a little bit for a little bit. It looked like he was getting hot.
Because of the baggage from falling apart?
Because he won and has that baggage. Yeah, yeah. And he's still super young and charismatic. That would be my nominee.
I wouldn't call him charismatic.
He's pretty charismatic. Yeah, I would.
Jordan Spieth?
Yes.
No fucking way.
What are you talking about? Charismatic to by what definition?
He owned the golf world as a 20-year-old, a 21-year-old, a 22-year-old, 23-year-old. By far,
but even that, he wasn't cool.
It was because he was young.
Nobody's cool.
But he owned it because he was young. It wasn't because he was cool.
But now it's because
Koepka is cool.
Now it's because he's
Koepka's
fragile.
A dick.
But he was cool. He was interesting in person. You wanted to watch him.
He was?
Yeah,
he
I think is? I thought he was.
Now for Jordan, it's because he's fragile. It's because he's talking to himself like a raving lunatic.
Yeah.
On every shot. It's because at any moment in time, he can wow you or make you cringe, which is exactly what his round looked like today as he went back and forth and back and forth to finish 3 under. He is still the golden child in many people's minds, but I don't think he's the most interesting hang off the course that we've ever seen. And that is probably at the core why there isn't the guy. For a while, we thought it might be Bryson DeChambeau, only because he was just so interesting to watch. He was the story 18 months ago in golf. And today he was nothing. He petered his way around there. Finished
I forgot he was
over.
There. We didn't even go out of our way to look for him.
It's nothing. So it doesn't exist. And before that, it was Phil Mickelson who showed up this week looking like Skeletor.
Yeah.
And still somehow, you know, he declined a bunch of interviews this week. He's intentionally kept a low profile. I'm stunned he shot 1 under today.
We talked on Tuesday about how it's kind of a big three. And one of you pointed out, can Rory be in the big three if he hasn't won a major in 9 years? Should it just be Rahm and Scheffler? Rahm felt like he had the most juice of all the in their prime guys with the gallery, but just because he's good. But I wouldn't call him like necessarily captivating either. But it did, you know, he double bogeyed the first hole today. Never how you want to start.
And then shot 9 under.
Then put a massive score up, and you could feel the momentum shifting when we were parked on 10 and he passed through. That was fun. But I don't know, does golf even need a star? Like I look at like where basketball is now. LeBron is at the tail end of his career. Curry's 35. And when you talk about like who the next guys are, I don't feel like Giannis, Embiid, Jokic, all these guys, as great as they are, I don't feel like they've kept... They're almost like basketball's version of Rahm and Scheffler, you know? These really best at what they do, but nobody, you know, they're not going to transcend anything from an audience standpoint. So maybe, I don't know, maybe golf just isn't going to have it. What were you going to say, Jay?
I think about the conversation you and Wesley Morris had about Tom Cruise like 2-3 months ago.
Yeah.
In Hollywood, maybe it's the same thing, right? You can't replace that because there's just too many options. There's too many good young players. You were talking about that, Nathan, right? About the next generation. They're just better than ever, but maybe there's just more of it than ever before.
It's kind of what basketball's like.
Well, this is the moment that golf is really thrilled with, in the sense that they created these elevated events. It came out of, they created really out of whole cloth in response to the live threat. The ratings have been terrific and the competition has been terrific. And the reason that we were talking about a big three for right now is because Rory played really, really good at the end of last season and then arrived this season playing pretty well. Also, Rahm has won a couple times on tour in the calendar year. Scheffler's won a couple times so far. And the moment, to your point, Bill, that we're in right now is those three guys sort of taking turns. And then what other kind of up-and-comers can kind of crack that? But what the real thing that golf is after is having all the best guys play at the same time. That's why this Masters was so goddamn anticipated coming into it. We finally have all the best guys playing at the same time for the first time since the Open Championship last year. And Brooks effing Koepka is tied for the lead. That is some shit right there. That is exciting.
Yeah, that's a good one. The most interesting guy who passed through our vortex today is Patrick Reed.
Yes.
The crowd did not like him.
Well, it was just quiet. It was respectful.
For golf, that was like, we don't like you. He made a birdie and it was like tepid applause. We were screaming because I have Patrick Reed 72-1.
Well, we're all sitting here with four aces hats on. So.
Yeah, we were four aces.
Nobody was cheering for him. We were the only people cheering for him today.
Yeah. The only ones.
Yeah.
He made the only... What 20 footer that we saw in 2 hours?
It was a great putt.
And I think one of the things that got debunked today was this myth that the LIV guys have not been playing and aren't going to be able to come out and play golf. Nine of them are even par or better. They all sort of held their own. I think what we know now is that there's some good guys playing LIV. And so when Patrick Reed finishes third in a tournament and Brooks Koepka wins, it might not mean they're the best golfers in the world right now, but it does mean they're playing decent golf. So it's not a surprise when they come over and play well against the PGA Tour guy.
Well, they put us on notice at least on a Thursday, right? This tournament is set up. I mean, we still, all of the chaos of the tournament is in front of us.
Yes.
The four rounds of competition. Now, these are young guys and they're used to playing on big stages, but, you know, the thing that's been missing from the LIV events is anything that feels like competitive tension. So let's have some competitive tension and let's see as the chaos unfolds this weekend.
Where were the other three aces when Patrick Reed was, is it like wrestling where
four aces?
It's like when Shane McMahon had the Mean Street Posse. Does he have the other
DJ
three?
DJ is an ace, isn't DJ?
Is he one of the four aces?
DJ's an ace.
Yeah, DJ's an ace. DJ finished one under. He birdied 18 to finish one under. So that was the.
Do you guys want to be the four aces of podcasting?
Yeah, that would be, yes. Let's get hats four like, aces. Like those guys.
We watched a practice round. We watched a hole with Patrick Reed and DJ yesterday that you guys talked about on Fairway Rolling. And Patrick Reed was just like fucking icing these short game, these chips, and it's like, oh man, Patrick Reed. So that led to the 72-1. He looks really comfortable on the course. What's funny about him is I think he's accepted that he's just never going to be liked. And what was it? Chang identified with the Patrick Reed mentality of, I feed off your hatred.
I'm a big fan of Patrick Reed. I may be the only real fan of Patrick Reed in America now, because I love that he's just like, fuck it, I'm a dick and let's just roll with it. Hate me.
I think if he'd accepted it, he wouldn't be suing journalists for hundreds of millions. If
I
want to
sue journalists too. I sort of envy everything he's done.
One other thing we noticed today, the pins were in nice spots and it was a good weather day and the weather's going to turn. And we were wondering if they're trying to goose the scoring a little bit today. Because we have John Rahm shooting basically -9 in the last 17 holes. That's not a typical Masters event.
Yeah.
They served up a golf course that it was going to let guys get off on a good foot because of all the variables that are going to come into play starting kind of mid-afternoon.
Yeah.
Tomorrow, the air could not have been more still. It was like, it was hot and it was humid. And that, I mean, that's part of why Tiger didn't look. He looked, I mean, he wiped his face 15 times on the 10th hole.
Yeah,
he was having a hard time getting around.
He's also old now. He's older than Jack Nicklaus was in the 86 Masters.
Yeah, you're right.
It was the course played a full stroke harder in the afternoon, which I don't totally understand, or easier in the afternoon.
Easier in the afternoon.
Yeah. Harder in the morning. And so it may have just been as that fog came off that the guys were having trouble. We sat on 10 and watched a bunch of guys come up way short in the morning on the approach. In the afternoon, it looked like they did better. The most interesting course stat for me was that 13 played pretty easy, and even that's even with Jordan shooting a 7 coming down. It doesn't seem like it eliminated the birdies there. We didn't see a lot of eagles, but we saw
at least
a lot of
one eagle though, and I was wondering all week long, like if the total number of eagles we would see there would even get to 5.
Yeah, let's see what happens if it's really, really wet, which we're going to get over the next couple of days. Yeah, for sure.
Chang, what was your favorite thing about being back in Augusta?
Besides all the calories that consumed?
Yeah, besides that.
I have to say my favorite thing, and I was talking to House about this all day, were the portly golfers. Because everyone's super in shape, and I always ask House, like, this guy work out? That guy work out? And then you knew the people that weren't working out. And I'm a big fan of John Rahm. Even
like Shane Lowry, you got genuinely excited.
Look, I mean, he just looked like a lush that happened to be really great at golf. I'm a big fan of that. Yeah, the big boys that don't work out. I'm behind 1,000%.
The funniest moment of the day was when Chang got upset about what was the guy's name?
Which one?
The guy.
Oh, Higa.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk about this, Chang?
Asian tour golfer? No, let's not talk about it. He's amazing. He's top 100 ranked in the OWGR. Qualified by way of success on the Asian tour, and
I can't.
Yeah.
Okay.
He had a nice one into 10. We had a nice birdie effort out on 10.
We'll move on. Can we talk about the sandwiches and the food items? You know, what did you notice with the food, Chang?
I noticed that you said the most obscene thing today. Let's go get a PB&J today. I almost had to like leave the tournament. I was so upset.
I said I wanted to get a. I asked if they had PB&J, and you acted like
I'm not the only person. I had a head injury. Shit his pants.
Yeah, I mean, too. Like, well, you know, are you a 12-year-old child? Yeah. Like,
what? It's just the kind of bread they have and the $1 sandwiches.
Then he started coming at me for egg salad, but egg salad is a grown man sandwich.
Yeah, that's
PB&J.
True. I mean, not everybody loves egg salad.
Georgia
but at least it's
peanuts.
An, it's an adult.
Jelly. No? No,
there's no kids menu here.
Well,
you said that you saw chicken sandwiches the most.
I was walking around and I want to see what people are eating. I think a lot of beers are being consumed for sure, but I feel like chicken sandwich, when it's all said and done, will be like by far and away the clear-cut most consumed food in the 4 days here.
And I don't know how many people were doing your hack.
I didn't see anybody.
We didn't see
other
any
people
hack.
Tried to claim.
The biggest the problem with this hack. Is that nobody can take a photo and put it on social media.
Yeah, right.
True.
Yeah. There are a lot of people saving cups. We haven't really had a first Masters cup snake yet.
Yeah, there did snake. Seem to be a cup saving kind of frenzy
snake.
This
yeah,
year.
Yeah, we need a cup snake.
A lot of, not just kids, adults,
no, adults.
Grown ass men and women
yeah.
saving cups left and right.
Let's take a break. We're going to do more food stuff and then we're going to have a dopey draft.
This episode is supported by State Farm. If you've ever been in an accident and you're okay, but you know what happened, your first reaction is going to be, man, why did that happen? If you ever buy a new house or a new car or a new anything, there's this little rush you get when you're like, I did it. I made it happen. But really, the only words you need to remember are, like a good neighbor, State Farm. Is there. State Farm has options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Learn more at statefarm.com. This episode is brought to you by Taco Bell. If you're anything like me during a busy day at work, I need lunch that is just as fresh as it is delicious and easy. And the all-new Cantina Chicken menu from Taco Bell is exactly that. Made with high-quality ingredients like seasoned slow-roasted chicken, pico de gallo, shredded purple cabbage, and avocado verde salsa sauce. The new Cantina Chicken Tacos, Burrito, and Quesadilla are the perfect daytime choice. Try the new Cantina Chicken menu at Taco Bell now. So Chang, what sandwich would you add to all the options? Which right now, famously, pimento sandwich, chicken sandwich, gross egg salad.
Come on, man.
Chicken salad.
Chicken brioche. Salad.
BBQ.
A brioche.
There's
barbecue.
A BBQ, like, what is that? Like BBQ pork?
Yes.
It's pulled pork.
Pulled pork.
And they smoke that here. I've seen it. I've seen the process.
And are you good with that, or would you add something? Not PB&J.
The only
I'm
problem
guessing.
I had with the barbecue is Nathan insisting that you make a combination of the barbecue sandwich with the egg salad.
I'm over rotating on the egg salad. I understand. I am.
Wait a second. You would put barbecue pork with the egg salad?
I'm going to tomorrow.
That's disgusting.
I agree. Yeah,
we all agree.
What? In what world do those two things go together?
Chang's going to put caviar on chicken, fried chicken skin. You could
I have, and it's awesome.
I'm sure it's totally awesome. My point is, like, keep an open mind to what a great creator.
Keep an open rectum.
Oh no,
that sounds like a diarrhea special.
Oh no,
well, that's been part of this week.
I don't think you can add any sandwiches to what is being served in Augusta. It's just like it's a perfect selection. Everybody wins, except for
you.
Went
to a little roast beef and cheese.
That's not a Southern thing. No,
right?
You can't.
I still don't understand the PB&J thing. What's better than a really nice homemade PB&J?
Yeah, at home. You eat it at home.
I thought
home.
You had kids.
I do. One of them is allergic to peanuts.
That's it. Just putting your own politics
You just made
this.
Your point. You just made your point. The two aspects are you have that at home and you have it with kids. That's all.
The one thing we have not consumed is the peach cookie ice cream sandwich.
That's tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
Yeah. We're going to do that in the morning.
Yeah, we are. That's going to be my breakfast.
Here's my next Chang question. Which player do you wish was Korean? If you could take any player who played today and turn them into a Korean, who would you pick?
I'm going to just say this, right? There are a lot of Korean golfers that were playing today. And again, actually covered some of the Olympics in NBC when they were in Korea, in Pyeongchang. And I noticed that Koreans happen to be the best short track speed skaters in the world. And I've asked other sort of sports scientists, and they say, like, we're just, for a lot of reasons, one of which is the thighs that Koreans have. I think a lot of the Korean golfers today, I said, like, they would have been a world record short track speed skater. The person that I think could also be a short track speed skater is John Rahm. Huge thighs. Huge Korean-like thighs.
Big trunk.
Big trunks.
Yeah.
Can't fit in his pants. Big fan
of
that.
Can't fit in his pants.
So you would take him? Would you take Korean Patrick Reed?
Ah, shit. He's got... Nobody channels the Korean Han. Just stop what you're doing right now. Google Korean Han. And then imagine Patrick Reed. He is... the definition of Korean Han that happens to not be a Korean person.
You got
to
explain what it is, because we have people driving right now. You're asking people to Google when they're going 40 miles an hour.
It is a kind of self-loathing and hatred that that is like you can never sort of fill this hole of rage and revenge. It is just never going to be quenched. And that is Patrick Reed.
Is it cultural or is it in the DNA?
It is the DNA. Very similar to how if I throw a bone at a Labrador, it's going to have to bring it back. It's just genetically programmed. Okay. I feel that it's genetically programmed.
What is the source of that?
2,000 years of being enslaved, basically. Yeah.
That'll do it.
Yeah. My mom, who, as you know, is all Italian and can get a little... the Italian version of what Chang just laid out. We always call it, we have a name for it in my family, but it's similar. I almost wonder, like, the Italians and the Koreans. I think that's why we get along.
I do. And also, if you want to have a better idea, our good friend, Steve Young and David Cho have the episode of Beef. You can actually watch Korean Han. Mm. And then you can imagine Patrick Reed sort of playing one of these characters as well. I'm a big fan of Patrick.
Why don't you cast
him in the show.
Patrick, this has been a great podcast for Patrick Reed.
It's really
winning. We believe in you, Patrick.
He's really winning.
72-1 Patrick. All right, we're going to do a draft of people who could realistically win the Masters, who none of us think will ever win the Masters again. Either again or going forward, no way. But people that are always mentioned, who are always kind of in the mix or... anticipated as a possible whoever, we're just like, we're out and we're gonna go in a circle,
and they have never won it, or they've won it just never winning it ever
going forward, writing them off. Who do you have, Haas? You start.
Bryson DeChambeau.
I don't have to say it.
It's very easy. There has been long this skepticism about the suitability of his game to what Augusta National requires. He is, you know, by reputation and the persona he's created, this analytic thinker, this strategist, and he showed up a handful of years ago and said for him, this golf course is par 68 or par, he thinks of it as a par, because he knows he's going to birdie all four of the par fives. And so the real par at Augusta National, he's missed out on the entirety of what the golf course truly requires, which is a creative mind and artistry. It's why people say Jordan Spieth, it suits him so well because of his imagination around the greens, his ability to save par from anywhere. So Bryson DeChambeau is my number one. I don't think he will ever. He's going to miss the cut this week, and he's also not going to win the Masters ever.
We bet on him to miss the cut.
We did. Yes, we did.
Who do you have, Nathan?
Rory McIlroy.
I knew it. You looked right at me when he said it. Why'd you have to look at me?
This is the best that Rory McIlroy has ever played coming into the Masters. His Achilles heel has always been that he starts so damn slow. And coming into this tournament, he has had a lot of weight on his shoulders because he's basically the de facto PGA Tour commissioner. I get it. But if you're part of the big three, you cannot come into the Masters on the day that they have set up the course for scoring, because the next 3 days are going to be shitty on the weather side of things, and be 62nd out of 87 guys on approach if you are one of the best players in the world. Start slow and just dig out of a hole and finish the day 7 shots behind John Rahm, who is supposedly your rival. I think it's too much. I think it's this wonderful weakness and Achilles heel and one of the best players to play the game, and Rory McIlroy is never going to win the Masters.
Chang?
I don't follow modern day golf like you guys, so I'm just sort of going to pick a name that I saw this week, and I just, my vibe to me was like, he's not going to win. And I think some of you guys might know him personally, so no offense. Max Homa, I don't think he's going to win.
Wow.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I mean, Max did his best today. He walked the entire 14th hole with an AirPod in his ear and gave an interview, and he's doing his best to be that guy who's forward facing. But you saw some things behind the scenes watching the practice rounds that you didn't love.
Body language. You know, Bill's a big body language person. And
I didn't like the body language either.
The only thing that I would say with Homa is the one omission from his resume thus far. The one big hole in his resume is a very successful major performance. And his ascension to where he's like in the conversation as one of the top five golfers in the world has occurred in the last like 8 months or so, I guess we would say.
Yes.
Like where he really has put himself up there. So I think it's reasonable to say he's put so much pressure on himself to come perform. This is the first opportunity for him to show out at a major. This is the new homie Homa. Here I am, world. Come check it out. And maybe he's put too much pressure on himself.
Well, he talked a lot about distance control today. He managed to squeeze on that 14th hole. He said, if I can just get into red numbers, I'm going to sleep well tonight, and it's probably the only way I will. He got himself to one under, so he's still hanging around this tournament.
I'm taking Jordan Spieth.
What?
Wow.
Too much baggage. Saw it today. Walked right by us after he hit a shot, and he was walking ahead of everybody else. And he just looked like he had the weight of the world on his shoulders. And it was one of those, like, the camera's not following him, he's not on TV moments.
He looks sad.
That's also
he
how looked, you walk he, around
there was
the
like a sadness to him. No, I noticed it last year, too. I think he flew very close to the sun here in Augusta, right? And all the stuff that happened to him and the company that he was keeping historically, the way he was being talked about, and then to blow that Masters the way he did. And I just don't know if he's been the same since. I know he's had success in the non-Masters stuff.
He's also had success in the Masters. I mean, he's still collecting top fives.
I get it.
But winning.
I get it.
He's 27 now?
He's 29. He turns 30 in July.
Okay.
I just feel a weight with him that if it gets really close where he's in it, I don't know. It's just a body language doctor thing.
I got one more controversial one that's going to get me in a lot of trouble.
You're jumping the draft?
Oh, we got is this draft? Oh, I thought that was one.
We kept more than one round.
Good. We're doing two rounds. Oh. Nobody took Tiger
two
yet.
Rounds, two rounds.
Okay.
Tiger's the easiest one. Go ahead.
I mean, Tiger is the easiest one, but I'm not going to take Tiger.
Well, you could.
I'll just take Phil.
All right. Fine, take Phil.
I'll do a nice
take
cop
Ozempic
out.
Phil.
Yeah.
That was an easy one.
Huh?
That's a pretty easy one.
It's a cop out.
It's yeah. fine. He copped out.
I was expecting you to do.
I thought you hosted a golf podcast and would be able to ad lib with topics.
Why don't you I'll draft him. You make the case. Patrick Cantlay.
Oh.
Well, I mean, that's another guy who's got the glaring omission in terms of success in the majors. And
well, he's on the best guy to never win a major list.
That's right. We were having that conversation as well.
AKA the Colin Montgomery Lee Westwood list.
Now, these guys are still young enough. The three that have really achieved stuff on tour that hasn't yet translated into an actual major win is Tony Finau, Xander Schauffele, and Patrick Cantlay.
I think we have to put Max up there with six wins now.
He just got those wins. Like, okay. He's not like been sitting, you know.
Okay.
I'm not ready to put Max into that category.
Finau certainly yet. Had more top 10s in majors, top 5s in majors.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. He was stringing together terrific performances in majors for a long time. We don't have terrific performances in majors from Patrick Cantlay.
No.
The closest he's come was standing on the 17th tee in 2019, the year that Tiger won. I think that's right, right? Wasn't it 2019 or was it a couple years before that? When he was either tied for the lead or within a stroke
yes.
of the lead. And he blasted one into the trees on the right and finished ninth, I think.
So Cantlay, that's the case for Cantlay. And he came out again today and was meh. It's never one part of his game. It's just always one part of his game.
Chan, go ahead. Now you can draft.
Again, I want this to not be true. And this is also an example of sort of Korean hunt.
Oh,
and
no.
And I'm going to take the field here. And I don't want this to, I want to be wrong here.
Why are you doing this?
I have to because... I take the field of all Korean players. I just don't believe that we as a group will ever win a major. We'll win a lot of tournaments. We'll come in third, second place. We're just never going to win a major. Wait. It's very different than LPGA. We fucking win majors all the fucking time. Korean PGA players or Asian tour players that play in major tournaments, we're never going to pull it off. And I just believe that to be true.
You sound like Red Sox fans.
This was a draft about the Masters, not even all majors.
All majors. All majors.
What a voodoo.
You've never had a Korean player win a major?
Never.
No, Wai Yang is Korean.
Yeah,
and he beat Tiger in the PGA Championship.
Yes. Oh, so there's one.
Oh, he won, but did he?
He won.
Oh, we're saying moving forward now.
Yeah.
That's what you're saying. It. I'm not saying it. I love Koreans. I gambled on Sung Jae-im, for Christ's sake, to win this golf tournament this week.
Yeah, that was a bad bet. I want to be wrong. I'm an optimist.
A hero that makes Wai Yang going forward.
We love Tom Kim. I want to kiss
but
that
as a
Kim
real Tiger parent, what happened to him?
Who, Tom Kim?
No, Wai Yang. Where is he now? Tiger Woods? Where is he now? Right,
He's got the trophy forever. He's got that PGA.
A real Korean parent would say, like, you got to do better, buddy.
Right.
Where's your second?
You've only won one Masters.
Yes. Only one PGA. Where's the third? Where's the fourth?
So I can't take Tiger Woods?
You can. Of course you can. This is enough for this, by the way.
Draft?
Two rounds is enough. 8 guys.
I just took all Koreans moving forward.
He took unborn children.
Can Tony Finau be the last pick?
Oh,
wow. Why would
you do that? We love Tony.
No, but do we think he can actually win the Masters?
I definitely do. I personally do.
Or is he like an always the bridesmaid, never the bride kind of guy?
He has been that way, but I still think he can win.
Yeah, I do too. I also think Xander could win.
Me too.
I was thinking about drafting Xander, but I actually think he can win. Xander, all right, I'll take Tiger Woods.
Speaking of a guy who was standing on a tee, his 16th tee 2 years ago when Hideki Matsuyama, and he could have caught, he was tracking, he had Hideki right in his sights. Hit a ball in the water on the 16th hole.
Yeah, Xander looked terrific today. The only thing that we noticed from Xander is he is taking some oomph off of his drives in service of hitting it straight. It's been the problem, and no doubt he was third on approach, only to Rahm and Scheffler today, but he was 63rd off the tee, and that's the only thing that's going to keep him from winning.
Let's do some FanDuel bets, stuff that we like. It is now 8:45 Eastern time, so there's plenty of time to look at some of the odds. Tournament winning score, minus 15 or better is the favorite. Minus 14 or worse would be the other side of it. So basically they're saying 15 and up would be the score. I think we know we have some bad weather coming in. We saw what they did with the pins today, which I don't think they'll continue to do. I would go under with that.
I'm a lock for under. I couldn't agree more. The single biggest thing in addition to the rain is the dramatic change in temperature. It was hot as balls out there today. And it is going to be a high of, is it even going to get to
52 degrees high on Saturday with 100% chance of rain, low of 47.
Like a nearly 40 degree change in temperature between Thursday and Saturday. That is not conducive to low scoring on a golf course.
What do you think, Nathan?
I think definitely the under. Yeah.
We have guys at 7 right now, multiple.
Yeah. And the only thing that I'm looking at 7, again, we picked John Rahm, so we're a little biased on this.
He's down to plus 350.
John Rahm was second off the tee. He was fifth on approach. He was first around the green, first tee to green. He was 56th in putting. Scheffler, second on approach, 12th off the tee, sixth around the green, 85th out of 87 guys, and he was tied for 85th. So second to last in putting.
He's those plus 490.
Those are the two
favorites.
Best players in the world. I think it's going to, if those guys can figure out the flat stick, they're going to pull themselves away this week. It's going to come down to a battle between those two. That's the only way it could get up above 15.
So Victor Hovland, who was awesome today, is 11-1, well behind those guys. Chang, is it because he was wearing a Dave Cho brand shirt?
It was the best description of his clothing I could ever think of, a Dave Cho-like shirt. It was
Dave Cho designers?
It was hideous.
Dave Cho designed golf shirts? Would be what it looked like?
It was so bad.
Would Dave Cho like that you would take just look at a shirt and say it was hideous and that's why I associate it with Dave Cho?
Yes.
Oh, he would. Okay, good.
Yes, he would probably love the Hobbit shirt. Yeah, I'd looking at the odds for the anyone 20-1 and under. Spieth is 20-1, by the way. Hovland 11-1 seems high. Kepka is +750. Did you see anything today that makes you think Brooks Koepka can win his?
Yes. Sure. Yes. I mean, yes. We talked about it last night. That's why you got to come and go walk the practice rounds and watch the golfers. You learn things that you can't coming in. Brooks Koepka looked strong yesterday.
So he's recovered from episode 2 of the Netflix show?
Great. It wasn't, yes. No. Clearly not by his post-round interview.
Did you slide into his DMs like his wife did?
Is this thing on?
That's how they, I mean, they're husband and wife now. It worked. Good for her. She did it. You know what we know about Brooks Koepka, and we keep talking about it, and why we think there could be some fire where the smoke is with this idea that he could have an interest in returning to tour. He likes being on television. And if you're tied for the lead at the Masters, you get to be on television. Oh. You get to give big interviews to ESPN, right, Nate Dogg?
Chang had a very interesting theory about what happens if Brooks Koepka wins.
I think it breaks the LIV tour.
Wow. Breaks it.
What happens to the four aces?
They'll never die.
Do the four aces have a poster?
Oh, that's a great idea. Does anybody have posters anymore?
They should have a commercial. Like the four aces, they should have an animated series.
Like a Bash Brothers 80s poster. Yeah.
It should be like an old school Costco's brother poster, the four aces.
I'm sure they could. They'll do that for you.
How did they come up with the name Four Aces?
How did they come up with the name Range Goats?
It's inconceivable.
Flyers with Y's.
Torque, pronounced Torque.
By the way, this is the most media exposure that those team names have ever had.
Can you name all the four aces, Chang?
No, I don't even know. Other than Patrick, I can't name
our guy DJ's on the four aces.
I'm not a fan of him.
Taylor Gooch.
I thought
and
they
Pat Perez.
Yeah, it's Pat
AKA
Perez.
AKA the four aces. It's really like wrestling where you have the two famous people and then the two jobbers.
Yeah.
I think they traded Taylor Gooch. Didn't they trade him?
I think they did.
You can trade.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There's a whole thing. There's a whole.
You can trade in LIV Tour?
They trade.
These names have to be better.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's basically Patrick Reed and the Bushwhackers.
Yeah.
The LIV Tour sounds amazing. I didn't realize they had trades and weird groups that are like the Four Horsemen of the late 80s. Maybe I should give it another look.
It's gonna
the
fall.
Four aces.
Well, these are the names.
Read us the names, Chang. I didn't know any of this before today because I've just ignored the LIV Tour for obvious reasons.
The Stingers, Smash, Torque.
Punch. Wait, well, go back to Torque. So
I don't know
who's spelled
in it.
Like Torque, but they pronounce it Torque
because it's the Spanish players.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Niblicks. That's lame.
Didn't they change their name?
I don't know. Let's just say that in the business model, the Excel spreadsheet of this league, each of these teams was supposed to be worth billions of dollars, and it's stunning that the Niblicks hasn't delivered.
Ironheads, Fireballs, Crushers. This is lame.
It all sounds like control.
Majestics GC or Range Goats?
Range Goats.
We mentioned Range Goats.
Ripper?
I want names like Cougars, just like high school football names. That's what they should go with.
Like the Lions?
The Lions, the Commanders.
I would love to know how they market tested the names. As this
are there hats for some of this
I'm
stuff?
I'm not
they,
sure.
They have uniforms this year.
They're wearing them on the course.
They shipped all of the uniforms showed up in giant boxes in Mexico. They hadn't arrived in time for the teams. The premier event of the season was in Mexico. They shipped all the uniforms. They all put them on.
I'm going to ask Bill if I can start a LIV Tour podcast.
Could you do it with chefs, and then two jobber chefs?
Watch a single match. we're just gonna talk shit.
I hope that the LIV Tour is going to be a documentary someday.
Well, it's captured by the Netflix documentary, not in its own sense.
No, but I want the behind the scenes of like those guys trying to figure out a team name and somebody coming up with four aces and them all agreeing on it.
What's going to last longer?
That's amazing.
The XFL or the LIV Tour?
Well, the new XFL or the old one?
The new.
I think the new one's going to stick around because of gambling. I think people just want stuff to gamble on.
So how much longer do you think the LIV Tour's got?
As much patience as the Saudis have.
Yeah, as long as
for
MBS
losing
wants
money
it to stick around.
And again, we've heard legit rumors that Greg Norman is in peril and going to be fired, and that there's a push to try to bring some harmony between these two tours. We'll see how the next couple of days go.
Well, we talked to some high-ranking executives at a gambling company who told us that nobody bets on the LIV Tour.
Well, you can't, because it's just very bizarre, all the places that they miss. Because
they have individual stuff, but there's team stuff, and there's...
Well, if they were genuinely interested in grabbing some of the golf gambling community, they would have figured out a way to replicate some metrics, a way of actually analyzing how guys are playing, because that's what we want. If we're going to, you know, actually invest money into the thing, we have to have some indication of how guys are playing at various... You get no information at all.
No, I'm sitting here looking at the shots gained metrics across a bunch of different categories of all the guys who played today, and it is screaming that Rahm and Scheffler are going to jump up to the top of the leaderboard with a few things coming along. But if you don't have any of that, you just can't bet in the same way.
Why don't the team names have names like Money Grabbers?
they
no integrity whatsoever.
Moral bankruptcy. GC.
Wait, I have another LIV question. If you had to root for one of the LIV teams, I just mailed you all the teams. Look at your phone. I just texted you all the... Which team would you pick? Because there's the Smash team has two Koepkas. Our guy Patrick Reed's on Four Aces, as we mentioned. I mean, even the team captains are kind of depressing. Kevin Na is a team captain. Imagine having Kevin Na as your captain.
He WD'd.
I got an inspiring speech today from Kevin Na.
He shot
Bryson
40.
DeChambeau's a captain.
He WD'd.
Wait, question. How come Sergio Garcia is not on the Spanish team? What happened?
Well, he's on Fireball. He's on they wouldn't let him on Torquay?
There are two teams.
It's not a debate. It's Ripper because it's all the Australians, and they'll be the drunkest.
Chang, are you upset there's
fun.
Not an Asian team?
No, not yet.
Well, they're trying.
Not yet.
They did try. Danny Lee. What's that team?
Han.
The team
Han
Kevin Na's there, too.
Is Kevin Na the leader of the team that Danny Lee is on?
Yes, he is.
If Kevin Na is Korean, we're trading him.
He is, but I
think him to another.
He is Korean.
It appears they feel the same. Yeah.
He's out. He's lost his Korean card.
It's really depressing to look at the teams.
That's awful.
Four Aces is the most fun one with DJ and Patrick Reed.
I think I got a root for the Fireballs because Jose Andres and Sergio Garcia are boys. So you got to root for that.
Actually, my favorite is they're paying us in cash. That's the team name. any more bets, House, that you're looking at? Any top five, top 20? We have a whole bunch of finishing position bets. Hovland's plus 145 to be top five.
I want to wait till tomorrow. I don't want to jump into any of these markets right now. I'm confident with what we put out there, the specials that we put out. Jason Day played great today.
Yes. Yep.
That was one of our guys. John Rahm, obviously, we were all over him all week long. I ended yesterday's podcast saying that I was betting on Brooks Koepka. I did bet on Brooks Koepka. I'm happy that I bet on Brooks Koepka. I'm just going to let it ride into the weekend. Let's let this cut occur whenever it's going to happen. Hopefully they get the round in and completed tomorrow, but they haven't completed a second round on a Friday in 4 months. But you know, after the cut, then I'll reassess and see what kind of situation looks like.
Yeah, the most surprising thing about this leaderboard is the lack of surprises. The biggest surprise today was Sam Bennett, the amateur, shooting the first bogey-free round in over 30 years by an amateur. Everything else is just about as we expected, save for Rory being super fucking meh.
Yeah.
Total random thing. Who's the greatest Spanish golfer of all time? Is it Seve? Is it Olazabal?
It's Seve.
I think it's Seve.
Garcia's up there.
He only has one major.
I think it's Olazabal.
Olazabal has two Masters.
British Open. He's got a British Open too, right?
I think he has more stuff going on.
But Rahm like a Spanish person?
Yes.
He could be Rahm.
Yeah.
All right.
Long shots in the in the 20s basically. Shoffley's 24-1. Finau 24-1. Morikawa's 29-1. Portly Shane Lowry is 46-1. Cam Smith 50-1. It does feel like somebody from that group. Your guy Rory's 21-1.
This does feel like the Hideki Masters, which is that we're going to have somebody's going to be a beneficiary of timing and a break in the rain, aren't they?
So I think that's the case. And out of the names that you just read off, the one that really jumps at me is Cam Smith.
Yes.
Because he's a demonstrated, excellent performer at this venue. And he's also a guy that we've seen have success just a year ago in a marathon golf tournament that was interrupted by rain several times. He won the Players Championship in March of 2022. I think they finished the second round on Sunday in that tournament. I mean, so at 50-1, because of all the variance that's about to be injected into this thing, I like a guy with his stature at this venue.
You know what else? He's a hell of a captain for Ripper GC.
Here we go.
I know Mark Leishman, Matt Jones, and Jed Morgan really respect his leadership skills.
I don't know.
What would our live team name be? Old and Cranky?
I think Four
Old
Aces.
And Creaky?
Four Aces is such
no,
a good
Four
name.
Four Aces is taken.
Oh, it's taken.
Is it Four Deuces?
The Overeaters?
Yeah, Four Deuces.
Four Deuces for Nathan. Deuces.
Yeah.
Public Deuces?
I call that Thursday.
All right. Chang, anything else before we go?
I have no idea. I had so much to eat, so much to drink. Here's one thing for certain.
So much to spend. You spent so much money in the pro shop.
Why did you buy
so many hats?
Great job.
Well, I bought you guys hats.
Thank you. It was so thoughtful. I'm so appreciative.
It was very nice.
I bought a lot of presents. But I'm never going to drink three Bloody Marys ever again in the morning. It's never going to happen.
Nathan, any last thoughts?
No. I mean, listen, can we come back? I want
to
come
Masters?
Back.
Oh, you want to come back to the Masters?
I want to come
you
back.
You like coming to the Masters?
Yes. It's turning into a little bit like Vegas, which is that after 48 hours, you've started to marinate a little bit more than you need to. Mm-hmm. A little bit like dinner tonight, but I think from here, I'm ready to go home, sit on the couch, and watch this thing go.
All right, when are you guys doing your next pod?
Sunday night recap. I think we're
might be Monday though. Is the problem?
Well, yeah, we'll see, and it could be on FanDuel TV. I believe the recap.
Oh
Masters
yeah,
recap on FanDuel TV. That's it right. Is.
Excellent.
Yeah.
All right, so I'm coming back with Russillo on Sunday. We're gonna tape right after the Masters. The final NBA game ends at 3:00, so we're gonna do Masters Player Awards. All that stuff on Sunday, unless we get a Masters delayed to Monday, which when was the last time that happened?
1983.
Who won that year?
No idea. Irwin.
Was it any of the Rippers or the Four Aces?
It was definitely not. It wasn't a Stinger. It wasn't the Nutsacks. It was not.
The Nutsacks. Can that be our team name?
Yes, it can definitely.
These Nuts can become a presidential candidate. That could be our name.
It was Seve. Seve won his second match.
Seve.
See that? How disrespectful we are.
It's a little bit of an asterisk, the Monday Masters win. I don't know. It's like 1.5 Masters. It's like the bubble championship.
How dare you? It's harder to win on a Monday.
No, it is. All right, guys. Good to see you. This was produced by Kyle Creighton. Thank you, fellas. Great to see you.